Blog Talk Radio.
And you're listening to the Siren Media Radio Show. Siren Media Group is a multimedia company.
They were suffering all forms of colonization, oppression, exploitation, degradation, humiliation, discrimination, and every other kind of
hate. I think there's still a lot of hope for us to progress.
We are continuing last week's topic of the complex business, social, and political street mind of Tupac Shakur.
Being shot is either going to leave you with one of the two keys, either bitter or better.
Siren Media Radio, topic today is a family secret. Incest and molestation.
It's devastating.
It's the job of the parents to protect the children.
So our topic today is, should college student athletes receive payment?
That person, the college, is making probably about $4 to $5 million a year off that person.
Siren Media Radio. So our topic today is, my baby is a gangster like me. Hereditary gang membership.
The recession is getting bad now for the whole world. But it's really been bad for poor people in America for a long time.
Because those of us who walk around free of incarceration have figured out a way to institutionalize ourselves.
As generations of poverty who didn't believe that they could rise above their class, their stature, their education level, tried to get in where they can fit in.
There have been many of our people across the country from all walks of life who have taken it upon themselves to try and pool their ideas and to come up with some kind of solution to the problem that confronts all of our people.
What's good, people? Today is Thursday, March 5th, 2015. You're listening to the Siren Media Radio Show. I'm your host from Michigan, Dwight Rock Walker, General Manager of Siren Media Group, and joining me today is my co-host first. She's a social worker as well as a social and political pundit from Jersey City, New Jersey, Sean Defense, a.k.a. IQ. What's good, IQ?
Good evening, gentlemen. A pleasure to be with you guys again on tonight.
Great to hear you as usual. And he's a writer, rapper, as well as a counselor for troubled youth in Atlanta, Georgia. Sean Ennis, a.k.a. Wise. What's good, Wise? Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Peace to the family. Long live the revolution.
No doubt. To join our discussion, you can call us at 347-215-7095. Once again, that's 347-215-7095. You can blog with us live at blogtalkradio.com/Siren Media Radio. And there's our Facebook page at Siren Media Radio and our other Facebook page, Siren Media Group. Also, you can Twitter us or tweet with us at Siren Media Group. Siren Media Group is a multimedia company with a focus on film, videography, photography, graphic design, and entertainment, as well as online sales. Our radio show focuses on all of these elements, including social and political awareness. So today's topic is the prison industrial complex, a.k.a. capitalistic slavery. The prison industrial complex is used to describe the rapid expansion of the U.S. inmate population to the political influence of private prisons, companies and businesses that supply goods and services to government prison agencies, corporations, contract prison labor, construction companies, surveillance technology vendors, companies that operate prison food services and medical facilities. Many of the organizations attribute to and actively justify the reasoning and expansion of their businesses into the industry by the ideology that basically is a flawed ideology and the belief that incarceration serves as an effective solution to social problems such as homelessness, unemployment, drug addiction, mental illness, and illiteracy. In other words, the reasoning for both the private and I guess you could say the public prison is because it creates jobs for the community. Also, inmate labor is cheap, and this is the argument for expansion. The Constitution of the United States bans slavery except for prisons. Here is the text of the 13th Amendment, Section 1. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. So now take in Ferguson. The U.S. Justice Department just issued a report on the findings of its investigation of the Ferguson Police Department, as hopefully you've heard on the news. They basically indicated there continues to be rampant discrimination when it comes to the arrests that are in town. So basically what's happening is African-American people or people of African descent are basically getting stopped and pulled over at a much larger percentage than their white counterparts are. I believe that they said the and we got to take into account, you know, what the population is, 67% African-American or people of African descent. But still, when you have arrest records that are 93% of the arrests and the stops for traffic, as well as paying for certain things, you have to look at it twice and say, all right, what's going on? And it is an act of discrimination. So let's get started with my panel today, IQ. Based on my previous statements and by the prison industrial complex, how does the overwhelming arrest of African Americans in Ferguson, which are 90%, just to your knowledge, even though the population is only 67%, how does that play out, do you think, in the media, in the world, and what does it tell us?
It tells us the absolute truth that we've known for a very long time. Slavery may have been abolished in terms of legalization, but in terms of the way that we think in this country about the lives and about how essential African Americans are, they feel as though we're not anywhere near as equal to them as we actually are. In fact, if you ask me, I think this country wouldn't be who or what it is if it wasn't for the minorities that live here. However, based upon the Constitution, they now have an out, quote unquote, in terms of the way that they can do things regarding the way in which we are arrested, the way in which we are incarcerated, and nothing's going to happen about that until we stand up and do something about it.
Wise, what problems can you foresee with the constant creation of private prisons, and how do you think that'll affect our society if they continue to grow at the rate that they have been? So you got more people that's being incarcerated, and they're building these prisons, and it seems like they're trying to get people to fill them. What do you think, or what effect do you think that'll have on society as a whole?
Well, and we'll have, in regards to America, we'll have the number one prison industrial complex in the world. Like, we'll have, there are more people in American prisons than the top 15 to 20 countries combined, if not more, if I remember the stat correctly. And the other thing that bothers me about is you create a supply. You turn the prisons into a commodity that's traded on Wall Street, NASDAQ, you know, Standard & Poor's. So now you created a business. A business and a corporation's role model, if we remember this before, is to turn a profit. So if people, if we're living in times of crime where we have the less murder rates, crime is down, then we have a deficit. We have a supply and demand problem. We create problems, like I forgot what the judge was exactly. There was a prison that was built, privatized prison in a small community somewhere in the southern. I think it might have been Nebraska, but don't quote me on that. The judge ended up going to jail because he was sentencing children for minor problems in any other state that either got probation and or been reduced to children's court. He was sentencing children for 2 to 3 years for something like talking back to your moms or stealing from the store. Come to find out that he was getting a kickback from the private corporation that built the prison to put children there. So there's a deficit. Then you get these, that's one case. Then you have other cases where crazy laws are being put on the books. And they tell you that, the other things, they tell you that, okay, we no longer profile. But if you look at a place like Ferguson, where the population is 67%, and you have the 90% arrest rate of black people, who is the 67% percentile, that means they're arresting people, damn near more black people than there are in that population group. So you create a deficit that has to be filled by any means necessary, which is against the law. But it's a business.
You know, and that brings me to this question, because this might be deeper than just prisons, all right? When we talk about capitalism, you know, people say, you know, capitalism is supposed to be the best system in the world. But these are the drawbacks here. When you have something that's like this, okay, you build prisons, because no, a person is a human being, and every human being has flaws. You build a prison that's supposed to serve a purpose. But when the purpose is incarcerating people, and then because it's a capitalistic society, if the police officers or the judges are in on it, they can sentence people to get them into that prison, and that way at least there's other companies who can make money. So just like you were saying, Wise, this person was getting a kickback from the prison. And the prison is probably making money off of all the other vendors and everyone who has to serve that prisoner who was in the prison itself. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it really just makes you think that as a whole, capitalism, like I said, has its good points, but it also has its bad points. What are you going to say, IQ?
What Wise described also happened up in Pennsylvania. The judge was sentencing the youth to go into incarceration for really, really, really minor infractions. I'm not sure if that's the one you were referring to, but it happened here in Pennsylvania. But let me also add that there's a country, I don't remember which one it is, but they stopped arresting and imprisoning people who were arrested for drug issues. What they did was they put in rehabilitative services and they gave them opportunities to reroute the energy or the effect that drugs had on their lives. Not only did it lower their prison rate, but it increased their rates of employment and it increased the rate of success within those who had those arrests. So now,
I thought I just saw that too. I can't remember what I saw it on, but I thought I just read that. Go ahead, IQ.
But it's a prime example of what can happen when you take the energy that we use to put people under our feet and you give them an opportunity to reach above and climb a ladder.
Well, you know, if I could piggyback off that, first of all, when our Constitution, when the law that was put in the Constitution that, you know, you can't imprison anybody or enslave somebody unless for punishment, the prisons or the Constitution did not know that, like in New Jersey, when I was like back in the 1990s, when Christine Todd Whitman came into power as the governor and she privatized the prison, the Constitution, when it was written, that was going to be under the government's control. They had no idea, the forefathers, that one day that we would be giving our prisons up to private corporations. So therefore, the constitutionality of it has never really been challenged, and it should. The other thing about it, when you ask about the effects, and how does it affect the everyday person that's walking, especially minorities, we're disproportionately placed inside prisons, not necessarily because we're black. We're profiled because we're black and Latino. But the thing is, they automatically assume, for most part, and they're correct, that we're poor and we can't afford the right representation. Or what they do is they catch you, like, taking Atlanta, Georgia, or fucking Stone Mountain. It's a speed trap. If you come through and you catch a ticket, if you don't pay the ticket, they just exorbitant amount for speeding. They might give you more for $500-$600. During a recession, you might not have that. So, therefore, you're placed on probation, and your fine is broken down into increments, but there's also a $40 monthly fee to see the probation officer. If you don't have the money to pay the probation officer, then they lock you up, and you lose a little bit of job you do have. And this is basically the equivalent to a debtor's prison, where they're supposed to be outlawed in America. And there is a federal lawsuit, which I read in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, that there's a federal lawsuit going on where they're suing the state of Georgia for the effect of basically having a debtor's prison because people can't afford it. And well, I got caught in the same speed trap. Let me make this quick. I paid my bail. I got locked up on a Friday morning for driving on suspended insurance. I paid my bail on the way in. I didn't get out until Monday morning. Then people told me that they got your bail and they're going to give it to you. But the thing about it is that they receive state and federal funds for each day you're inside. So not only are they making money from bail, not only are they making money from fines, but they're also receiving subsidies for each day you stay inside the prison. So they're making money hand over fist.
Wow.
And that's what's wrong with the system. Now, the Department of Justice, during their investigation, they started citing examples of different things that's similar to that. They had a lady got a ticket. I think it was she got a ticket for sitting in a parked car. I think that's what it was. Or it might have been a guy. Sitting in a parked car, got a ticket. They said the ticket was because he didn't have the seatbelt on. But he's in a parked car. But they gave him the ticket. Whatever happened, the ticket cost like, I think it was like $89 or $105. But with fines and fees and everything else tacked on, the person basically has paid the ticket twice, got arrested twice, all for this one ticket, and still owes more money. They pay, I think they said all in all, they ended up paying like $1,000 or something like that. It wasn't like the person didn't pay it on time. But it's because of the justice system. So with all of that, it lets you think, you know, we've gone from being slaves. Then you talk about sharecroppers, which is still another form of slavery. Then you get into what they do to get people in prison so that they get kickbacks from the government. Now, it seems to me, and let me know if y'all agree with this or not, if these counties and these prisons are getting money from the federal government, then really shouldn't it be the federal government who has to come in and establish regulations for these things to stop these things from happening? Maybe they don't get paid by how many bodies they have in there. Maybe there's some other way. I mean, what do y'all think of that?
I disagree because from my research that I've done, and they do get this money, and that it's based on how many people they're given money for how to take care of each person that's under their care for that day. Now, and I believe this to be the truth. Now, let me just add something in real quick. Let's take the laws, how it applies to men who are on child support and can't pay, because we're talking about prison population and things you're locked up for. I'm not supporting men who don't pay child support. You know, you're a dirty bastard. Do what you got to do. But let's say you can't because you were locked up with a previous crime before and you got a felony. You can't get a job. Now, if you can't pay your child support, what do? They lock you up. You know how many poor people are in jail because they have a previous record, they have children, can't afford to pay their pay the child support, and they're locked up as a result of just being poor, and it's not a law in place saying if you can't pay, spend time with the children. It's just if you can't pay, you go to jail. You know how many men, whether it's black, white, Puerto Rican, or Latino, and females to that extent too, that are in jail just because they are poor?
Poor in child support, yeah. Now, but now here's the other side to that. Let me ask you this, and this for both of you. So if that's the case, you're getting locked up because of the child support, then are you saying that the laws that govern how much they're supposed to be paying for child support, which is supposed to be based on their income, are those laws inadequate? So therefore, is there something they should do about the law itself? Or do you think that the system itself is creating this vacuum where they actually target people who don't have money, knowing they're going to lock them up, so that way they get money on the other end?
That's a double-edged sword, because on one hand, the system needs to be reasonable and realistic regarding whether or not these monies can be paid to the parent. I totally agree with what Y said. There should be judges on the bench with enough sense to say, if you do not have money to give to mom or to dad, you should be able to give at least 5 or 6 hours of your time each week to spend with the child. The child may not be able to eat or drink the time, but ultimately the quality time that you give to the child goes further than that money. However, on the other side of it, I think that as parents, we need to be honest with ourselves. We don't need to be going up to the courthouse if that person we know for a fact is not in a position to pay. Some of that is on us in terms of child support.
But then that brings up another argument. Go ahead, Wise. I'll respond in a minute.
I believe it's completely on us. Let me tell you why. Black people don't like to vote in local elections. Therefore, when these laws are passed on the state level, one, we don't even know it's being voted on. We don't even know who our representative are. We don't know who to contact, who to call our constituents to have our voices heard. So, because we ain't voting. Then when a law like this comes about and they suspend your license, most places these days, if you don't have a license, you can't get a job. So you can't get a license, and we didn't even vote on this law because we just don't vote. We can sit on it back here, and we can specialize. We can talk about problems. I like to consider us as people who specialize in solutions. One of the solutions is we need to go ahead and begin to vote just for the fact that when situations or votes like this come up or laws like this, we can have our voices heard. Because if a man does not make any money, he should be allowed to use his time, man or woman, excuse me, he should be allowed to use his time. But being that everything in America is reduced down to dollars and cents, if you ain't got no money, you don't exist. But we have no influence on the law because we're not voting.
We're not representing.
In terms of the first, what Wise said, there's another factor to that too, Wise. If you do go to jail or prison or something like that, then you're going to have that on your record. It's going to make it harder for you to go get a job or something like that. And therefore, what ends up happening? You end up back in prison.
Wait a minute.
Yes, that you might end up back in prison. Now, in terms of what you say, IQ, in terms of the child support situation, though, the one thing I remember, I had a friend of mine, and I was talking to him, and he basically said, you know, he didn't have any money because he wasn't working at the time. He did spend Christmas with his ex and the kids, and she didn't even bring up the child support. But then, you know, I think a week later, he had gotten the summon for, you know, to go to court. And he said, well, she knows I don't have any money. But you know what I said to them? I said, you know what? What if she didn't have a job and she didn't have money? Those kids need to be taken care of somehow. You know what I'm saying? So when you get into domestic, you know, certain things like that, that's truly the domestic thing, it's a whole nother ball game. we can say how the laws are not fair, this and that, but in the end, there's a couple of factors here. One, we had the kids. We are responsible for them, right, we are responsible for them somehow, some way. Now, we could talk about the law, whether it's unfair, the amount you have to pay. Some people got to pay $25 a week, and they can't pay that. You know, some people can't pay, you know, $10 a week, and they, you know, that's what they're responsible for, and they can't pay that. And there's an issue with that because you have those children, and you need to find a way to take care of them. Now, people that got the outrageous amount of money, you know, like I said, we could talk about the law and what's fair and what's not fair. But as far as the prison is concerned, if it's habitual, like if a person is truly trying and is showing that he is trying to make that, then I think there should be some leeway. But if a person is not trying, then, yeah, they're going to do what they do and throw them in jail. But my argument to that is, if you're going to throw them in jail, the jail should not be making money off it because it just perpetuates trying to get more people to put them in jail.
That's my problem. My problem is not locking them up because they have it and they're not paying. My problem is the way you ask the question, and let me be clear, of how the prison industrial complex works. And the way that the law is written in this instant, it is basically setting the person up to fail. In a time of recession when you're dealing with unemployment numbers, when they put unemployment numbers on the television, that's not black unemployment. That's America. They consider white America, not black America. In black America, unemployment is usually 8 to 9 to even higher percent higher than white employment. So if you're dealing in the times of recession, do you adjust the law to fit the times because people are not working, or does the law still stand? And who's making money off people who can't work? The law itself and how is it written is set for the industrial prison and complex to advance and financially make a fortune while it sucks the lifeblood out of the people who can pay. And if you don't, you go to prison, breaking up and separating families even more, like the welfare law back in the 70s and the 60s, where if you're receiving welfare, the man can't stay home. And then they turn right back around and criticize black men for not being there when they, most of them, not the majority of them, or poor people, just can't because there's no work for them. But the law is never amended or adjusted, so it becomes, therefore, the law becomes a trap in itself, and the law now is an injustice to the people it's supposed to serve. That's a threat.
But having that record speaks to the severity of how the federal government is being able to benefit from what's happening. Because due to the fact that you have a record and you can't find a job, well, guess what happens? There are companies out there who get tax tax incentives when they hire somebody who has felonies. It's a whole list of companies out there.
They're usually not great jobs. Usually, not saying all of them. They're usually not great jobs. So those people making minimum wage, you know, and don't get me wrong, you could be working, there's construction jobs and stuff like that where you can make a lot of money. But there's also a lot of jobs where people, you know, you got that record and you can't. I used to work, when I first came here to Michigan, before I had a job, my wife was pregnant, I ended up working for a company that was like a temp agency, but it's where they send people out in the field. Kind of opened my eyes because I never worked blue-collar work before that. So I'm doing everything from getting feces under houses to putting tents in the concrete. But the one thing, and cleaning General Motors plants and stuff like that, the one thing I did notice was a lot of the people that were there were, you know, after talking to them, this and that, they may have had prison records or they really didn't have a place to stay, this and that. And basically, this company, I want to say, was exploiting them. You know, basically, the company was getting $12 an hour or something like that, but they were paying this person minimum wage to go out and do this back-breaking work, you know. But this is what they had to do. So one person can argue and say, okay, well, you know, they put themselves in that position, but you don't know what a person's situation was. You know what I'm saying? So in the end, at least that person is working instead of going out and doing other things. But after doing that for a certain period of time, I can understand why somebody would turn around and say, hey, you know what? I need to do something else that's going to get me some more money. And what happens in the end? You end up in jail or in prison, and therefore, here's this cycle. So the bottom line, just like I said earlier, with the capitalistic society, how there's some good things and there's some bad things, like we were discussing earlier. These are the parts that are the bad things. So let's talk about solutions real quick in the few minutes we got left. All right. Starting with you, IQ. What do you think we should do in order to improve this? Basically, you know, we have the prison industrial complex is basically slavery. What are steps that we need to take in order to combat what these companies are trying to do, which is expand these prisons even more into our communities?
Well, be made aware of what's going on around you. Stop living in a bubble. Read, watch the news, listen. Legislatively, be on point in terms of noticing what's going on around you. Lawmakers, your representatives, see what it is that is on those tallies, those voting sheets that we get. Read it. And if you can vote, make sure you take advantage of your vote. Be aware of what's going on. Don't just continue to think that what's affecting them is not going to affect you, because eventually it piggybacks down and it hits all of us.
Wise?
I follow IQ with this. Read as much as you could. Use the internet and social media to spread every piece of injustice that you can find, you know, and try to bring it aware to people who basically can have an influence. People, we have to vote as much as we don't like it, because these issues that have come up, when you don't have a say in or ability to vote, then you don't have a say, especially in local elections. The other thing is, man, know that these people going to get you in the law ain't set up for you to advance. Stop messing with these people like that.
Right.
Stay your ass home, black man.
Word. You know, I'm glad you said that, because I was also going to say there's the other situations. You see what's going on around America. Make sure your insurance is up to date. Make sure you got your license. Make sure you teach your children how to react in certain ways, because if you know that they have it out for you, basically, to fund these prisons to get you in there, and they're going to try and do certain things to get you in there, sometimes no matter what you do, you're going to end up in a situation. But don't help them get you there. You know what I'm saying? Don't help them. And I think that's some of the things that we need to discuss with our children and with the people in our community. You see what's happening in Ferguson. That was an oppressed society. That society now is fighting back, but they weren't fighting as much before. Yeah, they had a couple of people on the ground, but not as much before. But after the Michael Brown situation, now they're fighting back. Now it's coming out, all of the racist things and everything that's going on, of which we'll pick up on later because we have to close. So thank you tonight for joining us. For questions and comments, you can reach us on our Facebook page at Cyber Media Radio or by email at smr@cybermedia.com. From our executive producer, Harry Wooding, producer Josh Johnson, my hosts, Sean Defense and Sean Ennis, myself, Dwight Walker. Talk with you next Thursday. Remember, Psalms 37:24. Peace out, y'all.
Be what I want to be strong.